foregone conclusions. So they don't really represent what they claim to represent. And all it is progressive in paper, on slate form.
Well, that's the
question. So you'll hear things like from I don't mean to cut the guy down, but Christopher Crone, if my connection is right, saying things like, "I'll look into it," about the sleeping ban.
Mm-hmm.
Now this thing about educating the candidates, they know all about these issues, Robert.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nobody lives in a vacuum, and certainly anyone who's political in this town, there's all kinds of ways to educate oneself politically.
That's true.
Including listening to your show, and for that matter, including reading the Sentinel.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Which doesn't talk about the sleeping ban, but the camping ban, but no, I mean, the sleeping ban issue has been around for a decade in high profile, 2 decades, certainly, in terms of its reality, real content. And for the last year, the Sleeping Ban Repeal Initiative, thanks to you and me and others, has been on the streets. We've been talking to voters about it.
I support Walden, and I will, because she seems to be the most independent of all the candidates. And also, she is pro-development, and I think pro-development, its time has come in Santa Cruz. I think a lot of the hysteria about beach flats and south of Laurel is misplaced. This is prime commercial real estate. I will support Steinau, until proven otherwise, mm-hmm. on a similar basis,
mm-hmm.
Pro-development, and general boredom and being tired with the so-called progressive slate.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm getting tired of lying from all sides, but I can tell you that Walton and Steinau are going to be much harder on poor and homeless people, particularly around these nasty laws, than the other three. That's my general feeling. Now, I could be proven wrong, and I'm ready to be proven wrong, because you know, we had these dumb progressives before in 1988 who did sweep in, all three of them.
I think a lot of these things would never get established were it not for so-called progressives being in positions of power to legislate.
Well,
and similar is said about Bill Clinton, right? A lot of the draconian measures that have been instituted by Clinton would not have been possible. Under a conservative.
That's certainly true. Hang on a second.
Robert.
I'm getting some flack from this weirdo in the studio.
Robert.
Yeah.
Bathrobe Spear.
Yes.
I'm a listener to this station.
Yes.
I believe I'm listening to Sizzlin' Bob on the other end. Is that right?
That's correct. Yes.
Oh, Sizzlin' La Monica.
I know. This is
Nutcracker Nick Whitehead.
Of course. I know. Hi, Nick.
And he's nutcrackering away as usual.
Happy autumn. Happy end of the year.
Yeah, you can't keep that man down. The vicious white-haired rogue that he is. But let me just respond just briefly to this, Bob. The problem with Steinau and Walton is, one, they are waffling, and two, they are concealing their real positions on the homeless issues, and that's what really upsets me. Steinau comes directly from the Downtown Association that gave us, admittedly, through bogus and sellout progressives like Kennedy and Rodkin and Matthews, the downtown sit-down on the sidewalk, go to jail, ask for a dime after dark, go to jail laws. But they came from Steinau, and they came from the Downtown Association. She is the source of those laws, and so that's dangerous on the one hand. Walton, you know, who I like as a person, she's a nice woman. I've tried to educate her directly on the sleeping ban. I tell you, she cannot be educated. I have tried, and she lies about it. Then she ducks it. Finally, she brings up an instance where she did some jogging and saw a dirty camp. And so that means everybody should be arrested at night for sleeping. I mean, the woman is, you know, has, I'm afraid, fascist leanings around that issue. And you know how important that issue is to me. And so that's the reason I can't recommend anybody vote for those two women, even though I prefer to see women, on the ticket, because I think, you know, you need a balanced ticket in that respect. It's too bad that that's not there, but the issues are the most important thing to me.
Well, first of all, commercial interest must be acknowledged, I think, in any sincere political dialogue on a local basis. Right here in Santa Cruz, we cannot deny the reality of the necessity for acknowledging commercial interests. And the other thing, too, is that the issue that you raise, the sleeping ban issue, I don't see the aggressive stance by the so-called progressive slate, Robert. I don't see anything other than waffling, and I'll look into it, from an issue that they know full well how it reads, and they should have a position on the issue. So I would say the opportunities for changing the sleeping ban language are equal. Were Walton and Steinau and Quartararo to get in, as they are with Fitzmaurice, Sugar, and Crone.
I
would say the whole
agree.
Basis is off. And here, I would bring this up, too. I think one of the things that people have in regards to their contempt for the poor, for lack of a better phrase, is they lack a context with what it would be like to not have a safety net. And I think that a lot can be gained from communicating.
Who are you talking about?
About
Steinau and Walton you're talking about? Or?
I would say I'd be talking about every candidate that there is, with the possible exception of Clark. I don't know whether Clark has made a statement about the sleeping ban or not.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it was my feeling that all four progressives, and I think Clark is progressive too, have made statements again, you know, in favor of ending the sleeping ban. And they've just gotten more, you know, mealy-mouthed about it as the election approaches. But it's also, but you see, you have to weigh that against the fact that Walton and Steinau and Quartararo are against any changes at all in the sleeping ban, and they've made that really clear.
Now, let's put this in context. This is one issue. And one issue, in my opinion, should not decide a candidate.
No, I agree. One issue shouldn't.
It has to be an overview. And my overview at this point in time, 1998, is that Santa Cruz would benefit from a pro-development posture.
Well, that's also a one issue, and I think, you know, you've got to look at the whole context.
I bring that into the mix.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's the singular issue, but I bring it into the mix. I think a pro-development posture would eventually allow density to occur in Santa Cruz, would eventually allow backyards to be built in, and I think that's important.
Mm.
I do think it's important that the beach flats be acknowledged as being prime commercial real estate.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see what's gained from avoiding that.
Well, I think Crone and others have supported, you know, allowing for you know, granny apartments. I think that's becoming a fashionable and acceptable position. As for the beach area being, you know, prime real estate, yeah, but you've got families who are living there already, and there's got to be adequate accommodations made for those families. And Steinau and Quartararo and Walton have shown that they're ready to jump on the redevelopment bandwagon and, you know, essentially dump them, like I've been talking about homeless dumping in Modesto, without any kind of, you know, safety net at all. And I can't accept that.
I don't believe that would happen. My understanding is that there are already in place procedures that would take care of those people that would be moved from their present dwellings.
We've kind of talked about that on the air in the past, the last couple of months, and that is not the case. It is not even the case for Mercy Housing's development, which is now, you know, going into high gear. And, it's a matter I'd be happy to talk about. But let me first, since we're talking about the political debate, play for you and the rest of the listeners the question about the Beach South of Laurel plan at the student forum. And you'll get to hear the answers directly from all seven candidates, including Pat Clark. Rodent apparently has withdrawn from the race, and the rat has returned to his hole. But, hey, that's okay. Bob, can I wind this up with you and play that segment?
Well,
or is there something more you want to say?
Think change.
I agree. We need change. That's for sure.
You bet.
All right, Bob.
And I don't see where a change towards those that are pro-business is wrong or bad.
Well, I think
it would run amok. I don't agree with that.
Okay, I appreciate that, Bob. And be aware, though, that we have had Rotkin and Matthews and the pro-business gang on board for the last 4 years, and it's given us the gateway and other monstrosities. So,
well, you know, one last thing here, if I might, because you kind of opened this up. If one wants to be sincere about the topographical future of Santa Cruz, it is Pacific Avenue as a commercial corridor extending from Highway 1 to the wharf. That's going to happen. It's a matter of time.
Mm-hmm.
And one can argue whether the particular moves that were made in the riverfront development, River Street development, were correct or not, but I think that they had to do something. All right, just like what's happening with the flats now, something has to be done. Something ultimately will happen with South of Laurel. Eventually, we will have a commercial corridor from Highway 1 to the wharf.
And I will let you have the last word on that one, Bob.
The rest is silence.
Okay. Bye-bye. And that was our man looking right and checking out the scene from the more conservative perspective, or the pro-development perspective, depends on how you want to view it, Bob LaMonica. As I promised, I'm about to play now a tape of one question asked at the UCSC forum on Wednesday. It's hopefully pretty audible. Their speaker system is pretty good. Let's see how it goes.
Number three, before you vote on the Deep South Wall Development Plan, each of you express either support or opposition to the plan. Please briefly explain your previous position and your current
plan. My current position is identical to my previous position.
This is Keith Sugar speaking.
This is Keith, because I think consistency counts. I was opposed to the project. I was opposed to the project because the additional 15,000 cars were put on the road. I opposed it because it would have decimated the Latino community in the beach area by reducing the livable neighborhood area, boosting density through the roof, and surrounding it by very high density, high activity commercial such as box stores, outlet centers, and 4-acre boardwalk expansion. So very inevitable for those folks, and also they were not included in the planning process. So I'm very happy that the City Council had months of getting away on this, I, along with Chris and Tim Fitzmorris, with the finally persuaded the City Council to step back from the brink and to approve what we now have, which is a very scaled down program without the street realignment, box stores, or further extension.
My position was really.
And this is Pat Clark speaking.
Slow on the beach development project. To my students, I ask, where are all the impacted forests in the building started? Do you know anything about the impacted and the generations developed? Where are the people growing in the coming process? And then talk about how we can be part of that process. One thing I have done is now a campaign that says throughout the community in different times, different places, limited chat groups. Up to 30 years, I believe, within the middle of our campaign strategy. They're listening to not only those for, those against, and understanding why they're against and why they're for. But my standard is that we're not in here the same amount. Slow down the beach development process too much too fast. My position again, each of the south of
my apologies, by the way, for the bad sound on this. We're listening to Chris Kroon on the City Council question. What was your position before, and what was your position
after? I think the council has been incredibly representative of the City Council for many years, for many reasons. But talking to communities and working with them, I think that we got an opportunity to turn that situation around. I also think that the plan right now is that a point of the cutback, the critical expansion, the city alignment, is putting out anywhere from 29 to 162 units of housing, whatever the statistics that you need in different buildings of the whole project. But all of that could be revisited. And I think it's really great for you to decide on which campus up here will best represent your interests. If your interests are for the 15,000 more cars, and to go on those streets and put that into community housing, then it's who you'd like to vote for. If you are aware of the 15,000 more cars into this city, as well as city government, I'm going to ask any kind of here,
Jane Walton, I did favor passage of the plan because my understanding was each and every element that was proposed under the broad strokes of the plan had to go through the complete and entire planning process before it came to fruition. As I walked in the neighborhoods and as I thought about the plan, it was absolutely clear to me that one, I personally and a huge number of folks, we're very, very, very glad of Third Street realignment became extremely difficult when it was absolutely clear that the housing units scheduled to be demolished in favor of that project were among the 30 units in the entire neighborhood, and were not the units that were in such deplorable condition they needed to be replaced immediately. I recall on November 10th in the televised forum, I turned to Mr. Sugar and said, over my dead body, there would be 250,000 square feet of box stores at the beach. I reread my webpage, which went up at least by the near end of September, way before the vote was taken. I stand by what's on my page, and I thought you would read it as well. Thank you.
Next is Linda Steiner.
I just want to encourage the comments when they come, and I know it's a very short time to
thank you. The plan that I have been in support of all along has been the affordable housing aspect. Affordable housing throughout our city is very important to me, so that was a part that was very important to me. The sensible traffic plan is also a part that I supported from the beginning. We need to manage the traffic before we can do any more growth. And the conference hotel is something I supported all along. I think it's a nice opportunity for us to have a first-class conference hotel here in our city. We've been losing this sort of business to Monterey traditionally through, you know, we always have. So it's time for us to take advantage of that sort of situation. I think the compromise set by the city council was genius. It heard the public input and accommodated it. And I think everything worked out the way that we'd all like to see it. I don't think any of us are advocating 15,000 additional cars a day. Nobody is in support of that. I think that we can manage the traffic, and that this drawdown plan is a very sensible one.
And so far you've heard us answer questions, and we all seem to answer the question pretty similar to each other, but I'm one of the bad people that sat on the Planning Commission and approved a plan that we forwarded onto the council. And over the 3 weeks after we had moved it on, we had all the hearings and so forth on it. You've got to understand, the plan that the Planning Commission approved was a dramatically scaled back plan from that which the Planning Department had presented to us. We cut in half the commercial development. We made strong recommendations about mitigating traffic, not after development happened, but we wanted to see clear and measurable mitigations prior to and planning really existing as far as the traffic goes. I'm not going back on what I supported on there, but what I did see, along with everyone else, was an awful lot of people saying we hadn't been heard. I just want to assure you, though, that we spent an awful lot of time on outreach and so forth, and we held prior to the council a number of workshops and so forth, and took public hearing and public comment, and we shaped our recommendations based on those comments.
I was the plan before. I wrote a letter against it 2 years ago because of the traffic impacts. You don't understand. You have to understand how difficult this process has been. The City Council's decision actually supported my position, and I've lost endorsements because of it. And I've lost support from people that I find to be perfectly wonderful people because of this. Because this is the difference between whether we're going to develop and allow businesses to grow the city in the wrong way, or whether we're going to assert ourselves as a community and say, this is what's sustainable, this is what matters. But this is an extremely important issue, and it's extremely important that people sort out that yes, everyone's happy with the compromise, whatever that means, but that compromise is exactly what three people on this panel were asking for from the start, which was that it become an open process and that the community helped to plan this thing instead of it being a top-down process. Thank you.
And that was the three council candidates, actually the seven council candidates, talking about the Beach South of Laurel plan. Did they support it beforehand? Did they support it after the vote? What was their position? Had it changed? As I said, as I told Bob LaMonica, I think Steinau is a straight liar. She calls the compromise brilliant. It's not brilliant at all, unless, of course, she really means that she favors bringing back all this stuff later, because that's how she was talking before. And I don't think she has changed her mind. And I think it's disingenuous for her to say so, not that I can see inside her mind. Anyway, the real point, however, is that the issue is not over. And that, I think, is a point that is really brought home by Phil Baer in this next interview. We're also going to be talking with Ben, concerned with police brutality. You heard me interview him a couple of sessions ago. He's looking into police brutality, and he's encouraging people to contact him. We're going to interview him. He's a UCSC student who's also doing the November 12th Happy John Dine commemoration, which is going to be involve a vigil at the town clock, a campus forum, and then a march down to Happy Corner, as I understand it. We're going to be talking about that shortly. In fact, I'm going to hold off on this Phil Baer tape and to give Ben a chance to call back. And while I'm doing that, let me alert you to a few things coming up. Police brutality and human rights abuse in the United States, Friday, October 30th, 7:30 p.m. That's, however, up in San Francisco at the Socialist Action Bookstore at 3425 Cesar Chavez Street. Speaking will be Van Jones, National Executive Director of the... I've got to be able to read that. Ella Baker Center for Human Rights, which houses San Francisco and New York City Police Watch, and a member of STORM. Dennis Bernstein, producer of Flashpoints and KPFA, and award-winning investigative journalist, and Shannon Coughlin, co-founder of the Human Rights Solidarity Committee and Police Watch, as well as Ali Bruce. All this again Friday, October 30th, 7:30 p.m., Socialist Action Bookstore, 3425 Cesar Chavez, donation $150 to $3. It's between Mission and Valencia. And if you want more information on this or any of the other announcements you hear on my show, give me a call off air. Either you can call the studio line, of course, at 427-3772 here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, which is what you're listening to, or you can call me off-air at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. It's got a 24-hour message line in case you want to leave a message, in case you've got something you want to put on the air that you think is pertinent to homeless civil rights. Leave a message there of any length, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And there's also upcoming in Monterey County the National Tribunal on Police Brutality and Misconduct. That's happening November 6th and 7th. This historical event is a gathering of national and local leaders, as well as community activists and victims, family members of police brutality, to provide testimonies to the tribunal about ongoing epidemic of police brutality. A partial list of the panels and presentations will include community and governmental actions, religious communities' roles, forensic medical, civil human rights attorney, media, prisons, political prisoners, family and victim panel, and others. This important event, sponsored by the Charles E. Vaughan Senior Foundation, you may remember Charles E. Vaughan was the man shot on the roof of a seaside building by several police officers. Actually, I think it was by one police officer. And, of course, that's been completely vindicated. I read about it yesterday in the Monterey County Herald. They said everything's rosy and fine. Monterey Peninsula College Ethnic Studies Department, Seaside Democratic Club, participating panel members, Ron Daniels Center for Constitutional Rights, Van Jones Bay Area Police Watch, Michael Zinzin Coalition Against Police Brutality.
Good man.
And, whoops, looks like we got Nick Whitehead, actually a Stop Police Abuse. Stop Police Abuse Now in the studio, and an incoming phone call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yeah, Robert, it's Ben.
And Ben, you're the UCSC student I was talking about.
Yeah.
And we interviewed you. We talked before.
Yes.
What's cooking?
Well, we just got back from filming the police brutality march that was put on by the October 22nd Coalition on Thursday.
Uh-huh.
It was really powerful. About 1,000 people showed up. A lot of families who had relatives killed by police brutality, and it was wonderful because we were able to make a lot of contacts towards our film, which we're doing a documentary on police brutality in Santa Cruz, and got to meet up with the October 22nd Coalition people who basically are dedicating their time to gathering the families, making them one voice, and just letting the police know that they're not going to take their excessive violence anymore.
Hmm. Have you had much response from local folks around Santa Cruz police abuse?
Yeah, we have. A lot of it has come in the past week, and interestingly, it's been a lot of people have used my email address and emailed me, and it seems like a lot of people are really scared to, they're willing to tell me their story, but they're really hesitant to go on camera, even when we've told them that it can be confidential and their face blocked out. So there is a lot of fear, but we've had a lot of people call in the past week. A girl, actually, who was at a rally against McDonald's in, I think, May of 1996 and had her head smashed in against the side of a ventilator at McDonald's.
I remember that. What was the name of the... Wasn't that officer... let me see if I can remember his name. He was the same officer who actually was kind of nice to homeless people back in 1990 at the homeless table. That's why I remember him. He would actually hire homeless people from the table.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, yeah, I'm not sure the officer...
I know who he is. I've got to remember it, but it'll come to me in a moment.
Could you hold on a second, Robert?
Sure.
What town was that? The McDonald's incident.
Santa Cruz. Yeah. So we're on the line talking to
her. So we're in the process of talking to her. She really wants to speak out. She's actually also in the process of suing the city of Santa Cruz and is looking for other people.
Excuse me, Ben. The officer's name was Officer Lennon.
Yeah.
Oh, shoot. That's dangerous, man. Take on Lennon.
Actually, we should actually add to our discussion Nick Whitehead, who is with us in the studio. Are you familiar with Nick, Ben?
Yeah, I actually talked to him briefly at the farmer's market last Wednesday.
I seem to remember that Officer Lennon was the guy who pulled his gun on somebody after he got him down on the street once.
Can you hear that?
Yeah, just faintly.
And Nick, you've been working with Stop Police Abuse Now, for about 8 or 9 years now?
I have occasionally taken reports down and told our public officials systematically about what goes on down here.
And I know that you were very concerned with what happened with Happy John Dine last year.
Right.
And you were instrumental in trying to get a police review board together, and I guess not terribly happy with what you finally got.
No, what I'm currently pressing for is an intervention system, because there was a similar incident to the John Dine shooting. It was a black man who was shot on a rooftop in
Seaside.
Charles Vaughan. And it was very similar because he wasn't taking his medication and it was affecting his behavior, and the police misinterpreted that as aggression and shot him dead. So what we're pressing for a lot these days is an intervention system on humanistic grounds, at least, where citizens who are knowledgeable can intervene and bring in the mental health services before the cops have to take out their firearms.
Yeah, I think it would be nice to disarm the police locally. I think they've got lots of weapons without guns in this situation. Guns, I'm not familiar that they're used much. And for example, the shooting of Happy John, he had a toy gun. The shooting of Brian Andrus on Button Street, his trial is going to be coming up again next month, a retrial, I should say. You've heard me mention, Ben, and perhaps you haven't, that there's an October 30th forum on police brutality up in San Francisco.
No, I actually haven't heard about that.
Yeah, that's at the Socialist Action Bookstore, for those who are interested, 7:30 p.m. on Friday night. It has Van Jones, Dennis Bernstein.
Let me just interject. I've seen Dennis Bernstein. I would recommend going up just to hear Dennis Bernstein. He's a KPFA alternative radio guy up there. And this guy is very sincere, he has a strong heart. Dennis, a good man.
Right, so that's coming up just for your information on the 30th of October, 7:30 p.m. at the Socialist Action Bookstore. And you, of course, can call me off air later if you want more information on that. And then there's the November 6th and 7th Monterey Peninsula College National Tribunal on Police Brutality and Misconduct. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, I did.
Look at those speakers. There's some tremendous speakers being invited. They're not guaranteed to be there. But I see that invited are People United for a Better Oakland, Pueblo Group. They're an effective group. Free Mumia Abu Jamal Group, Geronimo Pratt. Hey, we all love Geronimo, don't we? Now that he's free. Bear Lincoln, Puerto Rican Rights People, I mean, there's some really hot numbers up there.
Well, Ben, give us some more local stuff, though. I mean, you've gotten this complaint. I think it's Officer Lennon we're talking here. What kind of other kinds of complaints have you gotten recently?
We've got a complaint which we really want to get more information on because it sounds almost so absurd that it just would not happen. But if this is true, it's something horrible. A man who wants to remain confidential had a police officer knock on his door for something very much like what happened at the Button Street house shooting. It was a house with other people living in it, and there was some noises being made, and neighbors had called the police. And basically, the officers knocked on the door, the man opened the door, they threw this guy down who hadn't been involved in anything, threw him down, handcuffed him, and he said they put a bag over his head.
Yeah, I heard about that case too.
With holes in it, and uh-huh. They threw him in jail for 16 days, charged him with resisting arrest and something else, which he got acquitted for, but he is also trying to sue the city of Santa Cruz on that.
I was given, Ben, it's Nicholas here, I was given an explanation by Gary Yamani, who's in charge of the police review board in Santa Cruz. He's a liaison person, you know, he's a former police officer. He said that bag is supposedly to protect the cops from an HIV person who might spit at them or bite them. That's the ostensible reason for it. But hey, it could be used as a suppressor or punishment device too under those grounds, you know?
Yeah.
So you're going to be at this tribunal on police brutality and misconduct, or you're not sure?
I know I will, the Monterey Bay Peninsula on November 6th.
Yeah, that's November 6th, and that's at... It begins at 2 p.m. 24th and Mission Street. Wait a minute, I'm sorry. Now I'm looking at the October 22nd. It begins...
Get it right, big man, get it
right.
Get it right,
yeah. Well, you know, it doesn't say where it is. Monterey Peninsula College,
no, there it is.
Yeah, it's at Monterey Peninsula College on November 6th and 7th. It doesn't say what time, but presumably you can get more information...
And telephone number.
...by calling 644-8610. 644-8610 and area code 408. So... If folks are interested, they can do that. Now, Ben, are you still receiving complaints of police abuse? Would you like to give out your number?
Yeah, my number is 335-8069.
335-8069. And you're doing a local project, I guess similar to what you do, Nick, in terms of trying to monitor police misconduct and brutality. If you were to estimate, how many complaints have you received since you began this project?
I'd probably say, including on people who we've just talked to down on the street, there's just harassment, not necessarily violence, I'd say about 20 to 30.
20 to 30. And how many of these, I encourage you to ask this question, actually filed a complaint with the Citizens Police Review Board?
I'd say about 5 or 6, and a lot of the people who we spoke to downtown, when we asked about that, would just laugh and say, well, that's a joke anyway, so it's not even worth going to.
Uh-huh.
So,
yeah, I want to say at this point, for anyone listening who does have a complaint, that there's nothing wrong with filing a complaint with the Citizens Police Review Board if you are clear that you're not going to get anywhere with it, that it's only taking a kind of a record. It's making a record for the future, and it's useful, for example, for defense attorneys who call these officers into court later and subpoena their records when their testimony is impeached because of the history of police complaints. So, for example, I filed 2 complaints recently, one against Officer Northrup for banging on the back door of a disabled elderly vet when he was sleeping late at night.
Hey, what's going on here? Let me get out of
here. Luckily, we didn't have Nick Whitehead there, and I'm thinking of calling the police on him now, but we'll get a reverse sting on that one. And then my second complaint was about the, what was my second complaint?
I'm busy with my old lady. Get out of here, cop.
In any case, I file complaints. I think it's useful to do that, and I encourage people to do that. File a complaint with the CPRB, you just call 429-3262. They have a 24-hour line, and they'll call you back if you leave a number or... any kind of contact point. But let me let you get your own words in here, Ben. What you got more to tell us?
Yeah. Basically, not only are we asking for people to call in, even if you have not had violence perpetrated against you by the police, just harassment, because that is a big issue which we're dealing with downtown. We've had a lot of phone calls just from, you know, kids and people downtown, homeless people who are just sick of the harassment, who are just getting repeated violations for just sitting outside of a, like, I know somebody last Friday who just went and bought a meal at New Leaf, came outside and sat against the wall on New Leaf and was given a citation. So it's really ridiculous. We'd encourage you to give us a call, but...
Give your number again, Ben.
It's 335-8069.
335-8069.
Or you can call 421-9263.
421-9263.
And we'd encourage you to just call if you're really serious about helping us out and you'd like to talk on video.
Now, Ben, are you a Santa Cruz voter?
Unfortunately, I'm not, because I'm a British citizen.
I see. Well, we'll have to have you deported immediately for these kinds of activities, you know.
Yeah.
Can I mention a recent case that was brought to my attention? It's a slightly unusual one. A young Hispanic guy was badly treated at the juvenile detention center. They were bringing him back from a treatment, I think it was an alcohol treatment center further north in another county, and he'd run away from the center. You know, he had done that. He didn't like their treatment in the treatment center, so they were bringing him back to the juvenile center here at Scotts Valley, and it was nighttime. And the cop dragged him out of the car and threw him on the ground, though he was handcuffed. And this was right at the front entrance of the facility. Unbeknownst to the cop, the guy's sister happened to be visiting the facility on another matter entirely, visiting someone else there. Or her boyfriend was. And she saw her brother being dragged out of the car and thrown on the ground. He then ran away from the cop outside the juvenile detention facility. He's a real getaway kid. He's only about 16 or so. And they brought him down again, a flying tackle or something, and he was injured around the back and throat. And he already had back injuries, so it's really bad news for this kid's body. Apparently, the mother tells me, the story is he's a cross-dresser kid. He's a cross-dresser. The cops have argued with him on the street. He's given them a bit of lip, and they just detest this guy. So, unfortunately, I was busy and wasn't able to follow up. I tried, but I didn't get much further than that.
Well, Nick, maybe what you should do is also give your number. You operate SPAN, Stop Police Abuse
Now. Oh, yeah. Sure, I'll take calls.
Yeah, what? Give your number.
My number is 475-2012. Stop Police Abuse Now. I'll just repeat quickly. 475-2012.
So, Ben, you also were engaging in getting together a kind of a memorial for Happy John Dine?
Yeah, that's still in the process, and
Can people call you if they want to help you with that?
Yeah, definitely.
Give your number again for people.
335-8069. We're looking for people who can organize it, publicize it through putting up flyers, whatnot.
335-8069, that's on the 12th of November?
And most likely at 6 o'clock, and we'll probably start at the clock tower and then walk over to Happy Corner, which is front in SoCal. And then I'm organizing a Rascals event that'll go on at 8 o'clock, so people who can stay down at the vigil if they would like. But at 8 o'clock, there's also going to be a police brutality forum going on up at Crosby Town Hall at 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock, where my shorter 10-minute film about the John Dine shooting is going to be shown.
Wow. So, again, if people want to help you organize this Happy John Dine rally, they can call you at...
335-8069.
335-8069. Wow. And we're talking to...
Benjamin Jones.
And Benjamin, no relative of Van Jones in San Francisco, I take it. Is there more you want to say?
No, just... I just keep your eyes out, keep your eyes open for what's happening in Santa Cruz, and do something about it. Get active in any way you can, but just stop all this insanity which is going on in this world.
Thank
right
you.
On, brother.
Thank you, Ben.
You're doing
okay,
good work.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
He's carrying the flame forward. Apparently so. Let's hope it burns the right people.
Let me talk about police. I mean, not police brutality, but Amnesty International.
Actually, that's right, Nick. We called you into the studio in order to get your perspective on a human rights event that happened yesterday in Watsonville.
Right.
I guess there was a candidate, Sarah Amir, mm-hmm. from the Green Party for lieutenant gubernatorial candidate, spoke. Wasn't yesterday, or aren't we around the time of the 50th anniversary of the UN Declaration of Human Rights?
Yeah, that's right on. The International Declaration of Human Rights, which came about just after World War II, after the horrible abuses, the Holocaust in Europe. Abuses not only by the military, but by Gestapo-like police in Italy, Germany, and other countries, definitely. And there was gross cruelty towards civilians by all forces, Russians, Allied forces, not just the Nazis. That was a cruel war for human populations all around. Now, the speaker who stood out tremendously on this event in Watsonville at Henry Mello Hall, sponsored by the United Nations Association local chapter, the speaker who stood out was the Amnesty International Western Region Director for Human Rights. He told the story, Antonio Medrano. He's a former farm worker, picked fruit and vegetables in the fields around Watsonville, and he moved up into this international organization gradually. And he's done investigations of police brutality in Guatemala and Honduras, and he and his fellow investigators got rounded up and put in jail for 6 months in the country of Guatemala in the late 70s and early 80s, somewhere around then. So this guy's paid his dues, the price of being a diligent investigator. The great thing is that now the Amnesty report is out on brutality in our U.S. prisons and police precincts, and torture of prisoners and isolation of prisoners, deprivation of senses and all that stuff. This man, who's an international investigator, is now going to start carrying out local investigations in our neighborhoods in America. Obviously, he'll concentrate on big cities, but he's going to be on the foot, and he's going to appear and do the investigations, not always with notification of the authorities. He's going to do a thorough job, like they should do.
You know, I know that Jennifer Wagoner, Santa Monica human rights activist, editor of the newspaper Making Change, was interested, as was Keith McHenry in Food Not Bombs in San Francisco, in focusing on human rights abuses against poor and homeless people, and encouraging people to bring these issues to the UN Forum and to Amnesty International. For example, my case, when I was arrested for serving free food, convicted, sentenced to 2 months in jail.
You were almost an Amnesty photo boy, a poster boy, weren't you?
I was declared, it's not quite clear, I was declared an Amnesty prisoner of conscience. Nearly. I mean, it's actually...
How close can you get?
There are some who say, actually, I was an Amnesty prisoner of conscience. It wasn't really clear to me, but I was up there in terms of their focus on the issue with three other American prisoners of conscience, which, of course, did much more than I ever did, like Leonard Peltier and...
Robert, you were an Amnesty wannabe poster boy.
That's what Mike Rodkin said, but I actually think it was more than that.
Well, that's cool.
Amnesty took very seriously the issue of homeless people... People trying to serve homeless people like Keith McHenry and hundreds and thousands, actually, of Food Not Bombs people. And there have been over 1,000 arrests since 1988 and none since 1996, at least in San Francisco.
Well, you were the first guy.
Right, but I was, you know...
You were the first guy to step over the line and feed people right in front of police officers, put food in someone's mouth.
I certainly wasn't the first guy. I was the first guy who actually got convicted of it, but many, many brave and just ordinary people, seeing this as a ridiculous basis for an arrest, did so just out of the sheer outrage. And they did it in Santa Cruz, too, as you're aware, Nick, back in 1989 and 88, when Jane Immler, who we're going to hear later in the show,
Calamity Jane,
did her swap soup without a permit operation, which eventually turned into the free meal under Karen Gillette. So human rights issues for homeless people have been something that we've hoped by bringing to the American to the Amnesty International, to the UN, could be, there could be another avenue for addressing these real abuses. And as I understand it, Sarah Amir yesterday actually spoke out on the sleeping ban.
She did. Sarah Amir, you know, she was addressing about 100 people in the Henry Mello Hall. It was a rainy day. The attendance was a little bit down. But she made a point at this Human Rights United Nations gathering there, made a point of mentioning her virulent opposition to the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz and the deprivation of sleep as a very cruel procedure, and also the general lack of authorities to deal with poverty and provide for the needs of people on the street. She made quite a point about that, and it was well received. Sarah is a good speaker. She was applauded several times during her speech, and that may have been one of the times she got applauded.
Well, I know the Green Party at the state level and locally, as well as Peace and Freedom Party, SCAN, other groups, have all opposed the sleeping ban. They've actually, almost every progressive organization you can name has opposed the sleeping ban. That's why I find it so annoying that the progressive candidates seem to be backing away. We have an incoming call here.
Hello.
Yes.
Let me run.
Don't run yet.
Hi, caller. You're on the air with Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hello. Is this the infamous Huffster?
Yes, it is.
I wanted to call and probably comment on your subject and to let you know that I did buy a copy of the Street Spirit this month, so I guess I'm still a member of the club.
Well, I certainly hope so.
That's
now,
a great
I may be selling them soon also.
If you can call or speak up a bit, we have a bad mic
sure.
problem.
Well, I said that I bought my current copy of the Street Spirit, and I may be selling them soon.
Well, you may be selling them. You mean you're going to be homeless soon?
Well, my landlord doesn't want my puppy, so I don't know what I'm going to do.
Well, wow. We have a dog of a man in the studio with us here. Shall I introduce you? I recognize your voice, or do you want to remain
That enough? Would be fine. Well, my name is Randall Marr. Does the FBI record this? Or?
Well, I would hope so, but frankly,
true.
I doubt it.
No, that's the Friendly Bureau of Instigators he's referring to.
I see. well, as Robert well knows, I used to be in law enforcement and used to